Our next speaker is Michael Shaw, as Carl mentioned. Michael is the proprietor of Liberty Garden, which is a 75-acre private coastal conservation reserve of property near Santa Cruz. He's also co-founder of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. He's president of JM Management and owner of Lockaway Storage. He received his BA in political science and his JD from Santa Clara University. He's also practiced as a CPA, as a tax attorney. This is an issue of the journal Ecological Restoration. This is the June 2002 issue, which has an article related to his work, and he's on the cover of it. So, Michael?
Abundance ecology or sustainable development. The concepts contrast at their basic core, and what I want to do is explain them both and contrast them one against the other. Sustainable development is an attack on private property and individual liberty. Sustainable development is being orchestrated through the political policy process that has been adopted by the federal government and is being implemented by each state and most every county in the country. I'm going to explain in summary what sustainable development is and how it's affecting the lives of everyone, particularly from an environmental policy perspective. I'm then going to contrast the concept that we call abundance ecology, which is rooted in the ideals of private property, and use as an example a property that my wife and I own along the coast of Santa Cruz County. Abundance ecology is a direct relationship between man and land. That's the paramount dynamic that defines the nature of abundance ecology. It is for reasons of knowledge and innovation that an improving planet is possible only in a society that respects the ideals of private property. And in summary, and to be very short and to the point, I'm going to define private property as an owner's determination of the use of property. Sustainable development, on the other hand, is probably best described from the 1992 Rio conference, established by the United Nations, a man named Maurice Strong, who was Secretary General for the Environment and Development section of the United Nations, headmastered the conference held in Rio in 1992 called the Earth Summit. And there he said that current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class, that would describe everyone in this room, I suspect, that involves high meat intake, use of fossil fuels, gasoline, appliances, meaning refrigeration, home and work air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable. The origin of these thoughts are globalist in nature and are promoted firstly and primarily through the United Nations, as their webpage clearly announces. Sustainable development is what they call Agenda 21. The terms are used interchangeably. The Earth Summit, or Agenda 21, was the focus of the 1992 conference in Rio. There was a Rio Plus 5 conference held in 1997. In 2002, they reconvened in Johannesburg, South Africa. The UN Agenda for Sustainable Development is truly a global to local dynamic. In Santa Cruz, the program is straightforwardly called the Local Agenda 21 Program. I sat on that council. The discussion was about how human beings can't be allowed to further scratch the surface of Mother Earth and the like. But regardless of the discussion that held in the conferences, the outcome was predetermined. The book that concluded these meetings was probably written before the meetings even occurred. In 1997, the Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors quietly and unanimously fully endorsed the local Agenda 21 program, and it has been being implemented chapter by chapter by local ordinances ever since. But it's not just Santa Cruz. The Bay Area Alliance for Sustainable Development covers all the Bay Area counties. In Monterey, it's called Common Ground, and a mission document has been adopted and is being implemented by that Board of Supervisors. In Orange County, it's called Orange County Wild. San Fernando, it's called Vision 2020. You'll see Vision 2020 documents having been created over the last 5 years all across the country. Here in Alameda County, it's called Measure D, approved by the voters in the year 2000, creating narrow little settlements for development, everything else being off limits for development. My company, Lockaway Storage, is currently involved in litigation, knocking down we're attacking Measure D here in Alameda County, and I can thankfully say that our as-applied litigation has resulted in the issuance of a permit for the construction of a self-storage facility outside these narrow confines that allow development in this county, and motion for summary judgment brought by county council was denied just this week. So we're now looking at the damages phase in connection with that litigation. The United States support for Agenda 21 or sustainable development is clear. In 1992, when sitting in a yacht belonging to Prince Charles off the coast of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, George Bush signed the implementation documents for the United States to begin its own implementation of the Sustainable Development Agenda 21 dynamic. A year later, President Clinton, by executive order, created the President's Council for Sustainable Development. That included all of the leaders of various environmental groups, and a few business groups were represented, including the chairman of California's Pacific Gas and Electric, and the infamous fellow from Houston named Ken Lay of Enron. Very few business people were represented, but those that were, I think, were indicative of the kind of policies that have come out of the President's Council on Sustainable Development through the 1990s. In 1997, the counties and mayors created the Joint Center for Sustainable Communities. And you'll see increasingly, and we'll continue to increasingly see, the term sustainable used by your local elected officials who, when elected, are all trained in the policies of sustainable development. In the year 2001, the National Governors Association endorsed smart growth. Now, smart growth, as I'll explain in a little more detail a bit later, is the urban side of the sustainable development program. Sustainable development, according to the United Nations and the federal government, is to meet today's needs without compromising future generations to meet their own needs. Well, that sounds sweet, but it was lifted right from the 1977 Soviet Constitution. And pause for a moment and ask yourself, what if America had adopted this back in the late 1800s, when Americans were still using whale oil to light their rooms at night so that children might read and grow? If we had said we're going to save the whale oil in 1880 for people in the 21st century, where would we be? How many people would be educated? How much knowledge and learning could occur when the lights were turned off as a sunset? It's the same concept today. We've got to save energy processes, fuel, for tomorrow's generation, when human ingenuity, inevitably when set free, as Americans were in the 20th century, will find new sources of energy to keep our lamps lit. The real purpose of sustainable development is this. Sustainable development is a process by which America is being reorganized around the central principle of state collectivism. It uses the environment as bait while it indoctrinates and prepares our children through a public school process to live in a state-run collective. I like to call sustainable development the concept of shortage ecology. You see, the Endangered Species Act is at the centerpiece of sustainable development. And, of course, the Endangered Species Act strictly limits human action. It's predicated on international treaties, and it is rooted in what's called the precautionary principle. The precautionary principle holds that anything you do, you must first be able to illustrate that it will cause no harm. There's no trial. There can be no error. Because if you do something that is presumed then to cause harm, you've engaged in criminal activity. It reminds me of the Central Valley farmer who had a fire advancing toward his house. So he plowed out in front of his home. Well, he's in jail today because he harmed the habitat of an endangered rat that was presumed to be living in his front yard. You see, the Endangered Species Act puts government in control of plants, animals, and natural resources. And when you put the government in charge of sand, we'd have less sand. We certainly have less of all things good when the government takes its charge. Sustainable development has two basic action plans. The first is the so-called Wildlands Project. Now, the Wildlands Project is designed to eliminate human presence on over 50% of the American landscape. And it heavily controls all activity on most of the balance of the remaining land. This is a map of the Wildlands Project. It was prepared in 1994 by Dr. Michael Kaufman, working with others, got information out of Geneva necessary to put this map together. Merely hours before the adoption by the U.S. Senate of this wildlands proposal, he spread this map to the United States senators, who then did not even bring the issue up for vote. That was the good news. The bad news is the Wildlands Project has been implemented by federal and state agencies ever since that time. Now, what this map shows is the red areas are those that are wildland areas. The wildland areas are off limits to human beings for either resource extraction or recreation. Roads in the wildlands area are to be demolished. Clinton took a large step forward in his last months in office by eliminating many roads that exist in the red areas on this map. The orange areas are the areas of massive government control. All activities in the buffer zones, the orange areas, are to be under massive governmental regulation. The black dots that you see is where all human beings are to be. These are the smart growth zones. The Bay Area is beginning to be known by its citizens even as being a smart growth hotbed. Smart growth is the dense human settlement subject to increasing controls on how we live and increasing restrictions on our mobility. Those of you who remember the last election cycle ought to be able to identify easily with the increasing restrictions on our mobility. This county, Alameda County, passed a $2 billion bond, transportation bond, in the year 2004. Now, if you read the details of the Alameda County's transportation bonds in 2004, you'll find that almost all of the money goes to bicycle trails and rail lines. Sure, there was a study that made a lot of press. It wasn't always disclosed as a study for the widening of the Caldecott Tunnel. But there's no funds in those bond measurements for the actual widening. It's only to study the widening of the necessarily widened tunnel. The federal government is dead set into the middle of this dynamic. The Bush 1 presidency and followed by Clinton have taken all the steps necessary to administer sustainable development policies in the United States. All federal agencies have this as a centerpiece. This is from the United States Department of Agriculture website, and you can see they're not at all shy about proclaiming their allegiance to sustainable development. You'll find that the American Farm Bureau is a United Nations accredited non-governmental organization, which is why in so many counties like my own, The Farm Bureau is not coming to the aid of farmers as their lands become subject to the wildlands dynamic for centralizing control over their farmland. In our county, the farmers have to pay on their own water an extraction fee that will, within a number of years, cause them all to simply go out of business. And it's not as though there's a shortage of water coming down from the Santa Cruz Mountains into the broad aquifers of the Paro Valley. But the agencies charged with the implementation of sustainable development tell you otherwise without any evidence. Pass massive taxes and the farmers are in increasing trouble. But it's not just local agencies. Americans are increasingly being affected by international NGOs like this one, ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. Now, ICLEI, for this hemisphere, is centered, headquartered in Toronto, Canada. It has one office in the United States. It's in Berkeley, here in Alameda County. The purpose of ICLEI is to coordinate with counties around the country. And this website is from 1997. Today, ICLEI has coordinated with nearly every county in America for purposes of implementing sustainable development. You have to really pull teeth to get your local elected officials to acknowledge that they are, in fact, coordinating with the ICLEI manipulators who are seeking the implementation of sustainable development policies in your county. Let me return to the idea of abundance ecology. The practice of abundance ecology is this. The release of the potential productivity and diversity of a landscape. In order to do that, an owner must be free to engage in a rigorous program of disturbance. And he must be free to pursue a reasoned and creative process of trial and error. There's nothing particularly original about that. That's been the dynamic in America for 230 years. But today it's under extreme pressure from the sustainable development operatives that exist in every community across this country. The process of abundance ecology would be suited to the choice of each individual landowner and the uniqueness of each property. As David said, the project that we call Liberty Garden on the coast of Santa Cruz was covered in a Sustainable Development International journal put out by the University of Wisconsin called Ecological Restoration. How it is that we got to the cover of that magazine with a very straightforward analysis of the kinds of things I'm talking about tonight is still beyond me, but it gave me great pleasure then, and it continues to this day. This is Liberty Garden, picture in 1985 when we bought the property. I remember the day well because it's the day that my wife and I got married. Now, what you're seeing here is property, the picture's taken in the springtime, that you couldn't walk through without plastic pants because the thistles and the burrs from the European grasses that grew there and supported the cows for decades before this are not the kind of thing that a human being wants to walk through. It's very inhospitable. Now, the circled area is of the next picture, taken 20 years later in the springtime. Without planting a single plant or throwing a single seed, but simply by managing the seed bank, we were able to turn that landscape of 100% European plants. Oh, sure, there was a little poison oak thrown in down in the valley even. Into a 100% native plant oasis. These are all native grasses and native sedges and native wildflowers. We conducted that process by just good old-fashioned sweat effort, an idea that the Department of the Interior hasn't thought of yet. People were paid to do the work. We knew what we wanted to do. We didn't quite know how to do it, but it became simpler and simpler. It was just a matter of common sense land management and what we call seed bank management. A I'm going to take you on a little travel through Liberty Garden. This, again, is another picture taken on my wedding day in 1985. In the foreground, you can see the thistles. You wouldn't want to come close to touching those. And a dried creek bed, dried even as early as May. And here it is in December of the year 2003. The plants, the grasses to the side are all native grasses, predominantly a plant called Danthonia, which is the longest-lived grass plant in the world. Each plant can live somewhere between 300 and 1,000 years. And the plants don't exist. You don't see them very often, but you do at Liberty Garden, a true oasis of indigenous plant landscape along the coast of California. It's not just human beings that enjoy the landscape. All kinds of birds and insects and not such an unusual animal, but the ducks have taken up residence and now probably 20 to 30 are spawned each year, baby ducks, and make it to maturity and come back the following year. This is my favorite flower growing at Liberty Garden called Mariposa lily. They didn't exist in 1985 when we bought the property. But today they dot the hillsides along Highway 1 with a prolificness that's is simply unmatched. The native plant people are jaws drop when they come to our property because you don't see the kind of native plant dynamic on these government-directed, government-managed lands as you do at Liberty Garden. Again, a picture from 1985, the entrance Liberty Garden. This is an area at that time of year you certainly wouldn't want to walk through unless you were covered in plastic. And this is what it looked like in the spring of last year. All native grasses with little wildflowers growing underneath them all. I'm walking through this field in shorts and tennis shoes with socks with nary a burr attached to me. Something couldn't have done 20 years earlier. This is a field up on a hillside of what's called purple needle grass, sort of the state grass. I think the legislature dubbed it here recently. And you can search this state to find a few examples of it. But at Liberty Garden, with the process of mowing and other plant management activities, there are solid fields of these that are interspersed only with certain native flowers, like the one you see here. This is one of my favorite flowers. It took many years of management before this began to show, and we probably get 100 of these blooms scattered all over the property. It's called a rain orchid. It is an orchid plant, and they're known to grow in California. It is a California native, but they probably don't grow with per capita rate anywhere in the state, as they do at Liberty Garden. Here's back to the Mariposa lily. It's not just human beings who like it, but, it's the insects that sometimes give me the big thrill on a hike someday when you see insects you've never seen before, including butterflies like this one. This is Indian paintbrush. You'll see that down at Big Sur and other places, but this particular area was thick with poison oak. You couldn't walk in. Nothing could compete with the poison oak other than an oak tree. And after clearing the poison oak, all kinds of indigenous plants began to pop up, like the red Indian paintbrush. Goldenrod that follows the same example, former poison oak land. The poison oak was 30 to 40 feet tall, grew to the top of the oak trees, and nothing could penetrate this poison oak unless it was the size of a pack rat or something smaller than that. I like this little plant. It grows out along the hill along Highway 1. And the native plant experts tell me they've never seen them grow this far north in California. But this August, there'll probably be 300 or more of this lovely little bulb flower growing along Highway 1. And here's a California daisy that now grows throughout the property. An owl's clover. Lovely little flower that spots all over the grassland hills these days. And here's a globe lily. You don't see many of them, but there are some, and certainly 20 years ago there was none of these growing. and a mule's ear, which spots again the grassland hillside. And here's a field of lupin. At one time, this was all pasture grass, you know, Spanish oats that grow 4 feet tall, and, you know, by this time of year, they're just little stingers on you if they haven't been eaten by cows or something else. And that's all been removed. Seed banks have been virtually eliminated, and wide fields of plants like this lupin, begin to grow. I'm going to read a quote from the magazine that and David showed, Ecological Restoration, quoting me at the end of that article, when I said, because of the Endangered Species Act, what developer or landowner would want to purchase land and do what we are doing? Disincentives preclude innovation. It's no wonder that no one else is following a common sense approach that brings success. That approach is simple. It's control the weeds, manage the native plants, and manage the hydrology. Those are the things we've done at Liberty Garden. And those are the things that no one working under the confines of the Endangered Species Act, which we've violated for 20 years, has been able to achieve. The ESA is counterproductive to its stated purposes, and that's the core of what Liberty Garden is intended to prove. Liberty Garden is zoned for 30 houses in 20 years. I bought the house in order to raise my little children. They're now in their 30s. On that land, but we can't get a permit to do anything. So the reality is that under the Endangered Species Act, the more successful you are, the more you're punished. It's why the act must be, in my opinion, repealed. It has led to a society where the landowner's process is to shoot, shovel, and shut up. Now, we've taken the opposite approach, and we get punished for it. The Endangered Species Act is reliant upon application of the precautionary principle, which prevents human beings from taking the kinds of actions that result in the results of Liberty Garden. Moving back away from Liberty Garden and back to the concept of sustainable development. Those who are familiar with sustainable development know that it has an emblem. And that emblem is three interconnected circles. Each of the circles represents one of the so-called three E's. The first E is equity, rooted deeply in communist principles. Equity feeds into the second E, which is economy. Public-private partnerships, we used to call it fascism. You say, well, Americans aren't going to accept a communist system of equity and a fascist system of economics. I mean, we have some sense of understanding about history, even if we went to public schools. But you bring in the third E from the top, the environment, and Americans have fallen for the biggest ripoff in all of human history. This is the emblem of sustainable development. In this short time, I've attempted to show you what it really means and where it really comes from. You see, there's a manufactured dialectic behind sustainable development. You've got the right wing with public-private partnerships. We used to call it fascism, but the modern term is public-private partnership. And from the left side, we've got environmentalism and social justice, you know, the communist system of government control. Bring the right together with the left on that basis. I always see Bill Clinton and George Bush Sr. walking arm in arm these days. And you've got sustainable development. What it is a government-controlled economy with the results in tyranny. We've moved a long ways down this road. I don't think it's irreversible, but recognition of what sustainable development is all about, understanding that it is in your town, it is in your county, and I could say that to any American, anywhere. It has pervaded all things political. It leads us to this question. Which philosophy do we want to leave for our children? Do we want a society based upon the natural and unalienable right, the philosophy that was predicated upon the Declaration of Independence? Or do we want community rights and Agenda 21, founded on the principles laid out in the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights? Got to ask ourselves, what is the purpose of government? For this crowd, that's an easy question to pose and to answer. But for the average American, confusion is existing, and we've got to become very proactive in explaining to our neighborhoods and to our communities at large what the dynamic behind sustainable development is. The purpose of government under our traditional system is to protect the individual and unalienable rights of each person. Congress shall make no law. What we're seeing being replaced at the direction of both the Democrat and the Republican parties is an idea where controlling the individual for the greater good of the community is what's being served. And we see that best expressed in the UN Declaration of Human Rights in Article 29, Section 3, where it says, "The rights and freedoms may be in no case exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations." Well, who is the black man or the man behind the black curtain? It's not Kofi Annan. So what are those purposes and principles from time to time, and how will they affect our lives as independent human beings? That's the question that I think Americans need to be asking themselves. You see, in short, under the U.S. model, we're born with rights. Government exists to protect those rights. You and the product of your labor belong to you. But under the UN Declaration of Human Rights, government grants, restricts, or withdraws your rights according to its needs. You and the product of your labor belong to the community. I don't think the political spectrum runs on a left-right dynamic. I remember the nuns would teach us that left and right would circle down and combine at the bottom, one to the other. And I remember that every time I see a picture of Bill Clinton and George Bush the First walking hand in hand. It's an up-down, liberty at the top, tyranny at the bottom. And we need to remember what freedom is and how it's parents that raise children with a sense of conscience. And it's that development of conscience that leads us to a system where we're comfortable exercising our rights to associate and leading to the values of genuine free trade. Not international, bogus free trade, but true free trade. And it's through those freedoms that we obtain peace. Peace comes through private property, and it leads to abundance and prosperity. Sustainable development puts Americans on a different course. Agenda 21 is about regionalizing government. You'll see Arnold Schwarzenegger, for instance, 3 months after he was in office, came out with the California Performance Review, 2,500 pages, that called for regionalization of everything and the elimination of local school boards and the consolidation of school boards into 10 districts across this state. The state of Massachusetts has eliminated county government as it begins its process of regionalization. Regionalization is collectivism. It opens the door wide. And as we've regionalized and collectivized, we begin to live under the United States Declaration of Human Rights and in a world of tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz has products and information, a website. It'll give you a lot more detail on the process of sustainable development, how it's affecting our communities, and what you can do about it. So I recommend you take a look. You can also look at Freedom 21 or at libertygarden.com, which will identify in more detail what I've talked about here tonight from a land management perspective. I want to thank you, and I hope your wariness on sustainable development policies, which come from both major parties in this country, quietly and assuredly, be aware and spread the information to your friends and neighbors. Thank you very much.